You're listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey guys, it's Adam. This is The Conversation. I am so grateful for every last one of you, and I truly only wish that I could have a conversation with all of you just to see how you are doing right now, to hear what you're excited about, hear what you're nervous about, hear what you're worried about. I take it as a huge honor that you are spending any time with me. Hey, today's conversation is one that all of us need to hear. Honestly, all of us need to hear, whether you're a leader, just a human in general. Steve Carter is who I connected with. Steve is a pastor. He is an author. He is a leader. He's just a wonderful human being. Anytime that Steve is in a room, people are drawn to him in the best way possible. His newest book is called The Thing Beneath the Thing. It's the current book that I'm reading myself. Like, it's the book that I'm carrying around. It's in my office here as we speak. It's a conversation, though, talking about the things in our lives that often dictate our actions, our words, our attitudes. It's the hidden motives in our heart. It's the hidden brokenness in our lives. And this is just a needed conversation. I pray that you would hear this conversation, that you would think of maybe a few friends, that you would share this with them. And so, as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, I am here with someone that I have crazy respect for, pastor, author, podcaster, Steve Carter. Huge honor to welcome you to the conversation today.
Adam, it is so good to see you and so good to be with you. I mean, feels like last year, getting the chance to chop it up over your book, Love Has a Name, and just the stories that you told and the times that we've gotten to spend together. You are just a dear friend, an incredible pastor, and you have one of the most pure and true hearts of any man I know. So much love and respect from me to you. So it means the world to be on your podcast.
Well, I feel like we could have a bromance moment. Steve is one of those guys, just for people who don't know Steve. Steve is one of those guys, when he comes into a room, everybody in the room, even if they've never met him, has just crazy respect. Everybody in the room wants to grab a meal with him. Everyone in the room just wants to sit and listen to him. And so truly an honor. We're going to jump right into the book that I am currently reading myself. And I'm not reading this so I know what questions to ask. This is the book I'm carrying around, The Thing Beneath the Thing. Steve, you start at the beginning of the book with this moment of driving down the road. Something hits your car. If you wanted to share that story and then tell us the heart behind the book.
Yeah, I'm leaving my grandparents' house, and it's a snowstorm. I'm in my Honda Civic with my wife, my 9-month-old at the time. It's snowing, and something hits our windshield, and I realize somebody threw a chunk of ice at our car. And I lose my mind, man. I turn it a U-turn. My wife's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I see somebody running in the field." And I pull the car over, and she's like, "Don't, just forget about it." I'm like, I can't. That's like unjust. I gotta deal with this. I leave my 9-month-old in a snowstorm. I cross 4 lanes of traffic. I try to jump an embankment that I think is just filled with snow, but it's like snow covering a little creek, and I end up landing into the creek with soaking wet pants that is freezing. And now I'm really mad, bro. I'm like screaming, "I'm gonna find you. I've called 911. I mean, real, real good stuff going on in my heart at this moment. And I start chasing down this field, and I finally get to the suburban neighborhood at the end of this field. And, you know, 'cause I've watched CSI, I know what to do. I like close my eyes and I'm listening to hear a door, a garage, and I hear a garage go down. I run to that house, knock on the door, soaking wet pants, and an older gentleman answers the door, and I'm out of breath. And I'm like, anybody like just come into this garage? Can I? And the guy's like, "Yeah, my grandson just did, and his friend." I'm like, "Oh yeah. Can I have a word with them?" And I'm thinking they're 20 somethings. And so he closes the door to go get them. And I feel the prompting of the Lord just whisper to me, "Steve, who's the crazy one?" And I'm a middle school pastor at this time. The door opens and it's 2 sixth graders and they're like scared puppies. And I just look at them and I just go, hey, nice shot. And I walk away. And as I'm walking away, I'm like, I left my wife and my 9-month-old in a snowstorm on the side of the road. And I'm like, what is going on? And as I stopped there for a moment, it was the fact that I was leaving my grandparents' house because we were moving. And we were moving from Grand Rapids, Michigan to California for a new kingdom assignment. But on my way to my grandparents' house, I got a phone call from my realtor that said the people who were going to buy our house had backed out. And I was scared. And I didn't trust God in that moment. And I didn't know how to sit with my sadness. And all of a sudden, this chunk of ice gave me the purest release to be triggered and channel that sadness somewhere. And I called my mentor like the next day and I just told him what had happened. And he just started to laugh. And he just said, Steve, welcome to the thing beneath the thing, the endless discovery of what's really going on. And that phrase just really stuck. And anytime I started to get like frustrated, I was like, no, what's the thing beneath the thing? Every time I got mad or sad, what's the thing beneath the thing? And so that's been the work of this book, is trying to help people discover what's really going on. Or a better way to say it is why we do what we do and what God's word teaches us to do about it.
Yeah, no, that's so good. I think I look at my life and also just even what the church often addresses, and not just churches, but people in general. They talk about the thing, but they rarely, if ever, talk about the thing beneath the thing. You know, it's like...
Yes.
It's like, let's just figure out this surface thing to figure this out because it's starting to catch up with me, or I'm just kind of annoyed by it. But rarely do we ever actually get to like, okay, that's awesome that you want to address this, but what is this down here? And I don't even know where that comes from in our society, or even like not even to society, but at the church. Like, why are we unwilling to deal with it? And maybe for you personally, Steve, why have you stayed away from dealing with the thing beneath the thing?
I think for some of us, it slows us down, or we think it will slow us down. Yeah. We think to ourselves like, man, if I have to deal with this, if I have to be honest and human about this, it's going to be tricky, you know? And I'll never forget the moment when I came home a number of years ago and I was telling my wife about someone in a meeting who had triggered me. And like, I felt like everything I say, they minimize, or they're just their tone. And I was looking for some like spousal support, like backup, you know, like a little bit like borderline Christian gossip, but like, she's got my back. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know what she said to me, Adam? She said, isn't God so kind? I'm like, what do you mean so kind? And she's like, he's so kind that he keeps bringing people into your life that remind you of someone who has hurt you and wounded you. And until you have the courageous curiosity to honor that truth, you're going to keep missing the moments to grow. And I remember like being a bit irritated with that answer.
Yeah.
But as I stepped away and I thought about it, I was like, oh my goodness, like, it's not really this person. It's really about the past person, and this conversation or this situation or this thing or this moment of being triggered, it's a reminder. My counselor says, if you get hysterical, it's because it's probably historical. And just starting to think that every time we react, we're just simply reenacting the past. And until we can honor that truth, really, really trust God, not just with our eternity, but also with our trauma and our pain and our wounds, when we have that level of courage, we discover a Father, we discover a Holy Spirit, we discover a King, Jesus, who is willing to enter into the darkest, most painful places, because God's desire is not just to get us to heaven, but God's longing is that we would become whole, holy, and spiritually healthy.
Yeah, that's so good. So I as a pastor, I see people forced to deal with the thing beneath the thing, oftentimes through circumstances. For the person listening who's not being currently forced, what can we do to deal or to even begin to deal with the thing beneath the thing instead of waiting for us to be forced?
Great question. You know, I used to live in Chicago, and the city of Chicago is known for its potholes. And they are literally everywhere. These potholes are everywhere.
Yeah.
And what's so incredible to me about these potholes is you find yourself just trying to drive around them. But if you hit them, you get a flat tire.
Yeah.
And they're dangerous. And what I came to realize was in our stories, we all have potholes. Someone gets close to a pothole and it's going to trigger us. And so thing is really an acronym. The T is triggered. And when we get triggered, it's the setup that sets us off. All of this like past wounds, all of this sadness, all of this negativity, it's got to go somewhere. And so one of the first things that I'll try and teach or pastor or coach people is to be really, really aware of what triggers you. Like what actually, when this happens in your day to day, someone minimizes you, someone cuts you off, someone like you feel out of control. All of a sudden somebody said something in a certain way that creates like a shame storm. It triggers you. And what's amazing is for many of us, we don't have the skills to really deal with that. And what's incredible is if you come up to a pothole, some of these potholes are just caused by water freezing and it creates a crater in the road. But oftentimes that pothole is created because of something that was happening underneath the surface. And in 2016, 2017, a 72-year-old guy was driving and a pothole became a sinkhole. And he dropped down two stories. There's millions of dollars of damage. And what I've come to realize is, you know, and you get this pastoring people coming to sit in your office. Nobody wakes up and says, "Pastor Adam, today is the day I'm going to train wreck my life.
Yeah.
Today's the day I'm like going to sabotage all the good God has put before me. Today's the day I'm going to decimate my integrity." But it happens. It happens. And the reason it happens is because somebody got triggered. And they didn't know how to deal with that. So the H, when we get triggered for thing, is often for many of us, just like in Genesis, we go to a hideout. And that is the metaphorical places we go to escape our pain, to go soothe. For some of us, when we get triggered, the I represents insecurities. And these are when we create false stories about ourselves. And for many of them, those tapes start to play again and again, like you're never enough. Never have what it takes. Your sister's so much better than you. All of the shame that we just start to power down and we become less than what God created. But sometimes in our insecurity, the false story we create about ourselves is that we've got to like power up. And we watch people. They lose control of a situation. They get defensive. And then they just start verbally abusing another person or powering up. And all they're trying to do is regain control. It's insecurity. Sometimes we see people get triggered and they don't create false stories about themselves. They create narratives, and narratives are those false stories they create about others. And I watch this. And so I think for each of us, we have to do the hard work of going, what triggers you and where do we go? Where do we go to hide out? And what stories when we're triggered do we falsely create about ourselves? And the G is grace. And grace, in John Wesley terms, he believed that there were three stages of grace. And oftentimes we think about grace as just that free gift we received to get us into heaven because of what Christ did so beautifully on the cross and the burial and the resurrection. But the power of grace that Wesley and Paul talked about was like sanctifying grace. And that was that spiritual power, that ongoing process that makes us whole, holy, and spiritually healthy. And so this book is saying, what if we actually got curious when we got triggered? Because it points us to the past. It points us to some pothole in our story. And because we don't want that pothole to be a sinkhole that causes collateral damage for our family or our friends or our integrity or our church, we're actually going to do the hard work. And we're going to actually trust God with what he longs to do. And that is to sanctify us, to make us whole and holy and spiritually healthy so that we can carry his name and bear witness to his goodness, his truth, the freedom that is available. But we can't just talk about it. We got to walk it. We got to let that actually happen within us. And that's my hope with this book, is to help people recognize their potholes and do the work so they don't become sinkholes that create massive trauma for those around them.
Oh my gosh. That part right there, you might want to just rewind and listen to about three or four times. Steve, I want to go back. You talk about, kind of the deeper meaning of the word hypocrite is to put on a mask. And then you share these verses from Paul to Timothy of his sincere faith, which is the opposite of being a hypocrite. And as I read through that, I found myself convicted in so many ways of that's the life I long for, to live a sincere life without masks, without trying to put on fronts. How do we take steps towards that?
One of the practices that I do often is, my understanding of Proverbs 4:23. It just says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. And so for me, typically Sunday night, Monday morning, I'll play it back. And I'll look in the past 168 hours, last week, I go, is there a moment where I just got triggered? And because of that, I put on a mask. And maybe it was a pleasing mask. Maybe it was a performing mask. Maybe it was a pretending mask. Maybe it was I had to look like I was perfect in the situation. Yeah. Or I powered up or powered down. Like we're all, when we get triggered, the propensity is like, don't be seen, cover yourself up. It's garden language, again. And so I play that back and go, okay, what did I do right there? I just get curious. There's no shame attached to it. It's just curiosity. What was going on? Was I tired? Was I hungry? Was I stressed? And I don't spend so much time on the mask. I spend time on what led me and what I was feeling in that time. And then I do this practice where I move from playing it back to playing it out. And I look ahead to the next week, the next 168 hours. And I imagine myself being in that situation again. Probably tired, because I'll be tired at moments or not having food to eat. And I imagine that same situation happening. But now I'm like seated with Christ, and Christ is with me. And I imagine like Christ is like, this epic Popovich, coach, or like Coach K, just like this guy who's just sitting there going, okay, you're tired. And this person's human.
Yeah.
Like, what if you were kind to yourself? What if you actually lived in grace? What would be a better way not to reenact the past, but to respond in a grace-filled way? I just kind of play that out. And then if everything's flowing out of my heart, Jesus talks about this. Pharisees were like so fixated on what was happening on the outside, but Jesus was so fixated on what was going on in our heart, what's happening within us, the thing beneath the thing. And I have to play it smart. So if everything's going to flow from my heart, and how am I refueling my heart this week? It might be, conversation with you, Adam. It might be in the Word. It might be through a book. It might be getting out in nature and hiking. It might be just, Sabbath. It might be like, what's the thing that I'm doing to ensure if everything flows out of this, that I'm giving the right level of attention towards my heart? I'll never forget my biological father. He died of a heart attack pretty young. I didn't know this till later in life. And I remember going to a doctor for my annual checkup, and the doctor was like, hey, do you have any information on your family history, medical history? And I was like, oh, crazy. I found out my biological father a couple of weeks ago had a massive heart attack. And the doctor was like, how old was he? I was like, oh, I don't know, like pretty young. And she's like, what? And she like leaves the office. She comes back in. She's like, hey, you got to go. You're going to go on Thursday and you got to go get an EKG and we got to check your heart out. And I'm like, what? And so 2 days later, I'm back at the hospital. I'm hooked up to some treadmill. I'm running, and they're checking out my heart, and they're looking at like what's going on to make sure. And I realized something. This doctor cared more about my heart than I did. And I think when it comes to spiritual matters and my actual life and the way I interact with a healthy view of God, a healthy view of myself, a healthy view of my spouse, my kids, creation, others, starts in my heart. And nobody can do that for you. You have to, and sometimes as pastors, I'm trying as like, hey, your heart matters. But if you're fixated by the outside, you're going to miss it. And I think for me, refueling, playing it smart. And then the last thing I just commit to, I don't just play it back. I don't just play it out. I don't just play it smart. I choose and commit to play it honest. And I think in this day and age, we struggle with being emotionally honest. And again, feelings have movement to them. That's why they call it emotion. There's this motion to our feeling. And if we don't have the awareness, it's going to lead us somewhere to bitterness, to anger, to temptation, to self-condemnation, or actually to something more stunning, more beautiful, more kingdom-oriented. But that requires us as women and men to be able to just raise our hand and go, man, I'm sad. Like, oh man, I feel disappointed.
Yeah.
I did it again. I created expectations, which everyone knows is just premeditated resentment. I just created premeditated resentment over my date night. And I just like having that emotional honesty, I think allows us to actually create a posture of sincerity, which, like you said, is just two words in Greek. The first word is which means like anti in Greek. And the second word is hypocrite. So it's basically sincerity is anti-hypocritical. And that idea is that you would just drop the mask and allow yourself to be seen and known, truly human, truly in process, truly showing up as you.
Yeah, Steve, that's so good. It's so true. Last question I have for you, just in your own life and also publicly being at Willow Creek and seeing someone who hasn't dealt with the thing beneath the thing, is there anything that you learned through the time at Willow or even away from Willow, just in your own life, where you're just like, this is why we need to have this conversation. This is what, like, this is what's so important. And maybe this is the conversation that's not being had. And that's why I want to have it.
You know, I love the writings of Paul. There's so much of it I really, really relate with and I really resonate with. But there's a sentence in Romans chapter 7, verse 15, and he says, I do not understand what I do. And I think for many of us, we can really relate to that. I do not understand what I do. But I'll just say this. It's no excuse. It's no excuse. You know, when you've got grandkids, when you've got kids, when you've got a spouse, it's like you can't just step back and be like, I don't know why I did that. There's like the work that we must do is actually to understand why we do what we do. And not just why we do the good things, but why when we're triggered, do we choose something other than grace and God's goodness? And again, this is the lifelong walk, a lifelong journey. And you get to a point when you see people you love, mentors, pastors, incredible leaders who for so long have been able to bury certain aspects of their life because they're protected or they're insulated or they've got resources. But the truth is, and this is literally like what Twitter has become, is we're going to find you out. We're going to find you out. And I think I'd rather live doing the work to find myself out before somebody else has to find out the potholes that have become sinkholes. So it's really, really tough. And Paul finishes that verse with, I do not understand what I do. The good I want to do, I do not do. But the thing I hate, I do. And I think every human can relate to that. I just want to get really, really curious to go, hey, why am I doing this? My wife and I, we have this phrase, you know, you do what you want to do. The bigger question is, why did you want to do that? Why did you want that? Like sometimes, like if I'm really, really honest, like I'll create a fight with my wife so that there's space so that I can go do the thing I really want to do, which is go buy a pair of sneakers. And the actual intimacy thing would be for me to do is, hey, babe, I really love the shoes. I think I'm going to go buy them. And she'd be like, awesome. Or, hey, have you thought about it this? Or is this the right time to do that? But somehow from my story, I don't want to engage with that conversation. So I create a fight. I create drama. I separate myself. I do what I want to do. And the truth is like, I can't just say like, oh, I don't understand. No, like I have to do the hard work as a Christ follower to start to say, I've got to go to work to understand what's going on. that would make me want to make choices. And if I can start making little choices with sneakers, then all of a sudden I might make other choices and make other choices and make other choices. And little by little, you are self-sabotaging the good that God wants to do in you, or the good that God's done for you. And the collateral damage is real.
Yeah.
And I saw it up close at Willow. Collateral damage is real. I saw it up close in people's lives. And for me, I just go, it's not worth it. And so my call, my challenge to any of you who are listening, the expectation is not for you to be perfect. We're all far from it. There is only one man who was perfect. His name was Jesus. He's on the throne. I'm not. But our job is to really begin to be honest and human with the places that we know. If we're not honest, or we're not being just taking some real true inventory, can really sabotage or train wreck or create a massive sinkhole that doesn't just affect us, but also affects those around us. And it requires a heart and a passion and a soul to truly get to the thing beneath the thing.
Oh, that's so good. This morning, as I was reading, Steve, I actually had this thought. One of the most loving things we can do for our family and for our friends is to deal with the thing beneath the thing. And yes. It may not be to keep us from having an affair or imploding our lives. It might keep us from having loved ones who need to walk around on eggshells around us. It might keep us from being the parent, the spouse, the friend that everyone really doesn't know how they're going to be at any certain moment. Cause it's just like, I'm not sure what version of this person I'm going to get. I don't like, again, one of the most loving things we can do is deal with the thing beneath the thing. Steve, so grateful for you. We're going to have a link of the book in the show notes. Please go get yourself a copy. I can tell you this is a book. It's a quick read. But when you sit with the questions, and it's fascinating just to read through it, but the questions at the end of each chapter are not pleasant questions to answer. Like I've been writing out my answers on each end of a chapter, and yet it's so good. And it's made me talk about things, even with my spouse, and deal with things between myself and God that I wouldn't have otherwise. And so go get a copy of the book. Again, Steve, so grateful for you and all the things you do.
Thank you for having me on The Conversation, Adam. Grateful for you, brother.
The Conversation with Adam Weber is produced by the Converge Podcast Network and proudly distributed on Faith Radio. Special thanks to these partners. For more information on this show, visit convergepodcast.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.